The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
Parshas Toldot, chapter 25, verse 19. Rivka, it says, feels some kind of eruption in her stomach. The Midrash says it was really pretty dramatic. Why? The Midrash says that whenever she would walk by a synagogue or a house of worshiping God, the one God, well then one side of her stomach would kind of right? And it would kind of erupt, wanting to get out. That's what the Midrash says. But then when she would walk by a house of idolatry, all of a sudden the other side of her stomach would go, and this is what the Midrash says, our oral tradition says, made her very, very nervous. Right? Made her very, very nervous. Like, what's going on inside of me? Okay? There's another thing. Well, okay, that's interesting, strange. But why did it cause such a strong reaction? So Shari hinted to something, which is important to understand. Who says that she knows she has twins in her stomach? Right? In other words, without ultrasound, how do you know that there are twins in your stomach? In fact, my next door neighbor, their daughter just got married. The daughter is a twin. And they didn't know she had twins. In fact, when she gave birth, the boy came out, right? And the doctor was trying to pull out the afterbirth. And he says, and 5 minutes later, he says, wait a second. There's somebody else in there. And then out comes this girl, right? And no idea that they had twins. So once upon a time, you know, nowadays we generally know we're twins, but, you know, once upon a time it wasn't so obvious that there were twins. So imagine the situation. The likelihood is that here's a woman who's been praying for a child. She conceives. What's the likelihood of her assuming that she has twins, or at any rate even thinking that she might have twins? She probably assumed that she's got one kid in there. Now this is really frightening, right? Because when she would walk by a house of service to God, this kid would get excited. But when she walked by a house of idolatry, this kid would get excited. And therefore, what made her nervous is, who is this sick kid? Right? This schizophrenic kid. This Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde inside of me. Who is this strange kid who's got absolutely paradoxical inclinations? And she was very frightened. And she's got good reason to be frightened. Because you have to understand something on the metaphysical level, how Judaism sees things. Birthing is a process of fixing the world. Right? Birthing is a process of fixing the world. How does one fix themselves? Right? Yeah, not always this is the way God has chosen for you to fix yourself. But it's important to know that one very challenging and yet very real way of fixing yourself is raising your children. Because when you raise your children, you're really raising yourself. Because your children are the externalization of different aspects of yourself. And the reason why raising children is such a tremendous challenge, because you see in your children yourself, and it gets you really upset. Now when you see the nice things you like about yourself and your children, it's great. But when you see the things inside of you you didn't like, or you tried to deny, and then you see it in your kids, wow, is that upsetting, right? Because it tells you, yes, you have this character trait. And yes, I got it from you, Dad. And so important to understand that our children become the externalization of different aspects of ourselves. Different aspects of ourselves. How does one do a personal fixing? How do I fix myself? I have to, what I would call, do an analysis and then a synthesis. Alright? In other words, giving birth is similar to, there's a experiment I remember seeing when I was in high school, and they called it electroanalysis. An electroanalysis is basically a very simple thing. They have in a tube water, and they're boiling this water. And what happens is the oxygen goes into another tube as it's boiling up and turning into gas. The oxygen goes into one tube and the hydrogen goes into another tube. Okay? When they're together, you see water. Right? But when you distill the water, and that's precisely the right word, distill the water, it breaks up into its components of hydrogen and oxygen. Well, so too, giving birth to children is a process of self-distillation. Right? And you're going to see this part of yourself and that kid and that part of yourself and this kid. And basically, like a deck of cards, you're going to be laid out on the table right there. There you are. And now you've got to figure out, as you try to educate your children, you're really trying to educate yourself. As you're dealing with your children's strengths and weaknesses, you're really dealing with your own strengths and weaknesses. Yeah? And it is a tremendous challenge. Right? You really learn a tremendous amount about life when you start trying to raise your children. Boy, oh boy. That's really your kids. Now, who was Rivka's mother-in-law? One of the holiest women in the world, Sarah. And Sarah gave birth to one child, Yitzchak. Holy man. Tremendously holy man. Alright? Now, all of a sudden, she's giving birth. She is to continue that lineage. And she's feeling tremendously insecure and really frightened. What did I do wrong? Why am I giving birth to Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? All right. You have to understand another interesting thing. In the Garden of Eden, according to the Kabbalah, when the first man and woman ate of the tree of knowledge of good and bad, what were the effects of the tree of knowledge of good and bad? The effects of the tree of knowledge of good and bad is that good and bad become confused. Listen very carefully. Good and bad become confused. And that's worse than bad. There's something worse than evil. Confusion. Listen carefully. You see, imagine two armies about to attack each other. One troop is wearing white hats. Another troop is wearing red hats. And they start charging towards each other. And just before they hit, a big gust of wind comes around. And all of a sudden, all these hats start flying off these guys' heads, get all confused, right? Drop to the ground, each guy quickly, without discerning, grabs a hat, places it on his head. My gosh. There's something worse than fighting your enemy. It's when you don't know your enemy. Right? If you don't know your enemy, there's no way you can fight your enemy. So, if evil is pure, high-grade evil, at least I see it, at least I know it, and I can fight it. But what happens when evil becomes intermingled with good and good becomes intermingled with evil? That is the situation we deal with in our lives every day. Nobody's absolutely good. Nobody's absolutely evil. And it's hard, even within ourselves, to be able to point what's the dark side of myself and what's the light side of myself. And that is the difficulty. It's important to understand that the human being, right? Now listen, this is heavy stuff. Before the man and woman ate of the tree of knowledge of good and bad, the snake was an external force that challenged them from outside. Okay? But when they ate of the tree of knowledge of good and bad, the snake became an internal force. And now it's hard to know what in me is coming from the snake And what in me is me? Before, that's the snake, here I am, we can fight. But when the snake's voice becomes an internal voice, and I can't tell if it's my voice or the snake's voice, then I'm in a very difficult situation. So what then happens? The way life, the way mankind becomes fixed from this mystical point of view is through birthing, right? Because through birthing, I'm going through a process of spiritual distillation, right? And the more we birth, so to speak, the more different characters become separated, right? Keyword separated, which is what consoles her, into different characters, alright? And that's a process of self-analyzation. You know, this confusion becomes broken down more and more with more and more kids being born into the world. And one kid inherits this dark aspect of myself, and another kid inherits this light aspect of myself. But we're not finished yet. Because once I've been able to lay the deck out on the table and separate and define the different forces, the next step is what we would call then synthesis. Because in Judaism, nothing is intrinsically evil. Right? Evil is an attribute that is out of proportion. When it's in the right context, that the force, the source of that evil is actually good. Alright? In other words, you might remember I once shared with you, there's a story about a fellow who was seeking the secret of life. So he went to a master. He asked the master, what's the secret of life? And the master said, wire, wood, and nails. And the guy said, great. Like I was hoping for a bowl of cherries, I get wire, wood, and nails. And he walks away completely confused. He does not understand what is the secret of life. And he thought, and he thought, and he thought, and couldn't get it. Just couldn't get it. Years later, he's sitting on his porch. Here's this person playing beautiful guitar music. And he was drawn by it, so he walked after the sound. And there he sat there, watching a fellow, you know, playing his guitar. And all of a sudden, he said, wood, wires, and nails. And what was the secret of life? He realized the secret of life is how you put it together. With wood, wire, and nails, you could create a weapon. With wood, wires, and nails, you could create a musical instrument. There is nothing inside of you that is intrinsically evil. What needs to be done is I have to get my components. I've got to analyze myself to see the various components I'm dealing with, and then I need to reorganize, restructure my personality, so that that which should be following is following, and that which should be leading in my character is leading. But when that which should be following is leading, and that which is leading is following, bad news. Right? You follow this. It's the structure that creates the bad situation. Right? It's the chemistry. You've got to decide how you're going to mix it. Alright? So this is in fact what's frightening her. She knows that she is part of some universal process called tikkun. Fixing. And that fixing is a process which is happening through the distillation, this kind of spiritual distillation, where various personality character attributes are being, you know, compartmentalized for the sake of getting clarity and handle of the various components so they're not intermingled and confused. And then, once we've got it all worked out in terms of that, the compartments, the various attributes, we then configure, well, what should lead and what should follow and what should direct and what should take directions. Follow? So Rivka was very frightened. because she felt that in her things were going the opposite direction. Just as things are becoming more clarified, right? Avram has Isaac and Ishmael, right? And Ishmael inherited the negative qualities of Avraham. But it's important to know that nothing intrinsically is negative, right? But will be if it's in the wrong gestalt. If it's not fitting, it's not in its proper place. Okay? Everything, every attribute in its proper place is important. The attribute of anger. Nothing wrong with the attribute of anger. There are things that should anger you. And that anger should fuel you to do something. And there are certain things that should not anger you. But if a person doesn't employ the attribute of anger in the right situation, then that's bad. And when a person employs the attribute of anger in the wrong situation, that's bad. Right? But anger in and of itself isn't bad. Okay? It all depends on how you employ it. Okay? Alright. So, Rivka thought, well, I'm part of this process of this, you know, this distillation. And look what kind of kid I got inside of me. Right? A very confused kid. So when she went and asked, what do I do? The answer is, you've got twins. And not only do you have twins, you're not only facilitating the expression of some kind of individual process, you are facilitating a national process. You're not just giving birth to two kids, you're giving birth to two peoples. Right? And it's not just simply two peoples, they're two nationalities with completely different characters. And they will separate upon birth, which is exactly what we want to happen. We want to have separation. In order for there to be unity, there has to be separation. Right? It's a principle that the Zohar talks about. He says, that which starts in unity ends in separateness, and that which starts with separateness will end in unity. The only way two can unite is when each one knows who they are. Right? And have the time to develop the unique understanding of who they are, distinct of that other person. And then two can become one, in a very lofty oneness that includes those distinctions. Right? But if the oneness is introduced prematurely, right, then what will happen is, eventually the personality will arouse. Eventually the personality is going to become frustrated and seek its expression. Right? So you can't introduce unity prematurely. There's got to be a healthy sense of, I'm not you, you're not me, before we can be we. Alright? And so therefore, when she was told prophetically that, don't worry, this is not one confused kid, but these are two children who have absolutely opposite directions. Right? And it's important to know that when they get born, they are going to go totally different ways. But ultimately, it will be the older that will become subservient to the younger. And that's in the best interest of the older and the younger. That must be probably the most difficult choice a parent has to make. To look at their children, imagine you've built up this tremendous business, and you've got three sons, and you don't feel that the business is going to succeed if the three are going to have to all three make a decision on what's going to happen. You have to look at which one here has to lead. Right? Look at the talents. One kid really has the talents to be the boss of this entire company. Another kid, fantastic talents to work in the graphics department. And another kid, fantastic ability, you know, to run the advertising campaign. But I gotta be honest, who has to lead? And who has to who has to call the shots? Bottom line, it's a very difficult decision. But if I put the kid who really should have been in the graphics department and I make him the head of this company, I'm going to destroy the kid and the company. I got to have the honesty to do that. And this is what she was told. that there will be analysis, there will be separation, and there will be ultimately reorganization, where the older one will know that in this situation, I must serve the younger one. He must lead. I must be subservient to him. And that's in the best interest of everybody. Right? Not everybody was cut out to be a leader. Right? Not everybody should be a leader. If you should be a leader, you should be a leader. And if you should be in the troops, you should be in the troops. You know, some people man the guns, and some people are sergeants, and some people are colonels. You got to know who you are, and that's where you'll be happy, and that's where, in the interest of everybody, it's going to work. And so that's why she was happy to hear this news. All right? That's why she was happy to hear this news. Okay. They have to also understand why it probably was so verbal about who she is. Because who is she? Right? Try and get inside the head of Rivka. Her father is Betuel. Alright? From a place called Aram. Now, you have to understand that in Aram, it was a community which was a very manipulative community. Okay? And the word Arami, when you play that favorite Kabbalistic game called Scrabble, you get Ramai. Right? The Zohar points out that Arami, when you play Scrabble, hints to Ramai. And what is a Ramai? Ramai is a deceiver. Is a deceiver. And this community, Padam Aram, apparently had a lot of very deceptive type of people. Now she has a brother, and his name is Lavan. What does Lavan mean?
White.
White. Her brother was one of the greatest con artists that they called him Whitey. Right? Because he was so dark, but so clever, they called him Whitey. So why does the verse repeat that she's the daughter of Betuel of Arami, and she's the sister of Lavan the Arami? Because this is her baggage, right? That she knows that she's the daughter and the sister and the member of a community of not the nicest, sweetest people in the world. Okay? And therefore, she's feeling very uncomfortable with herself. She's probably feeling very unworthy of being the wife of Yitzchak. She's probably feeling a tremendous amount of lack of confidence. And now, inside her is this confused kid, and she's comparing herself to her mother-in-law, Sarah, who everybody knows was the holiest of the holiest. So you put that together, you know, and you got a very serious situation where a person is really feeling very challenged. And who they are and what they're doing and what they're going to bring into this world. So that's why I think the verse was very, very careful to emphasize this. It's not simply Rivka who is distraught over this unusual conception. It's Rivka, the daughter of Betuel, the sister of Lavan. That is the person who's going to be very sensitive to her situation. Okay? That's the character we have here. And so this is what she's struggling with. And so, we go on. So it says that, and what happened, verse 24, and her days of pregnancy were fulfilled. V'yumilu yamei leledet. Her days of pregnancy were fulfilled. V'hine to'omim bebitna. And behold, sure enough, twins were in her stomach. V'yetzei rishon admoni. And the first one came out red. Kulo ka'aderes se'ar. He was so hairy, he looked like he was wearing a garment. Right? Like a red tweed suit. Because he was so hairy, this kid. Yikru shemo Esav. And they called him Esav. And then, v'yetze arishon. Achreken, and after that, yatzachiv. After that comes out his brother, v'yado ochezet be'ekev Esav, and he's holding on to the heel of Esav. V'yikra shemo Yaakov, and he called him Yaakov. Yitzchak ben 60 shana belevet otam. And Yitzchak is 60 years old in the giving of birth of them. Okay, when they were born. Why do we need to understand this verse? First of all, you see over here the tremendous difference between these two kids. Alright? One is red, hairy. Okay? And they called him Esav. Where do you get the name Esav? What does Esav mean? It comes from the word Asui. And what is Asui? Right? What is Asui? It means something that is complete. They called him Esav based on the word Asui. Why did they call him that? Because he looked like a completely fully grown man. Right? He didn't look like a baby. Right? He was so hairy and he had this garment on. You know, he looked like this fully grown businessman on Wall Street that just goes in and popped out and said hello. So it's just like obvious name. Everybody called him Esav. Alright? And then out comes his brother. And his brother's very different. His brother's hanging on to his heel. But is that the future? Is his brother going to be hanging on his heel forever? No, it's quite the opposite. Right? Because ultimately he, Yaakov, is going to be the leader. But this was his own struggle. He knew inside him he was the leader, but he knew that his brother was still the firstborn. And so you've got a whole family dynamic that we're going to have to deal with in terms of sibling rivalry. Right? When you know who your brother is, but nobody else knows, but you know who your brother is, you know who your sister is, and if for some reason your parents can't see it. Alright? And so he starts off very difficult. The two children struggled in the mother's womb, struggled outside the mother's womb, and those two children have struggled throughout history. Esav is the root of Christianity. According to our tradition, out of Esav comes Rome, out of Rome comes the church, and out of church comes Christianity. And Yaakov, of course, is the founder of, well, is the foundation of Judaism. And those two are going to fight. And they're going to struggle to understand, you know, what does chosenness really mean? What is our role? What is our relationship? And it's a very long, very, very long and difficult ride. So let's go on. So what happens is, he comes out, when Harry, verse 27, Vigdu anarim, so the two children grow up, V'yi Esav ish yodea sayad, and behold, Esav is a hunter, V'yakov ish tam yoshev olim, Yaakov on the other hand, is this simple man. Once again, very different. What's the difference? What's the difference? What kind of personality is Esav?
Aggressive.
He's an aggressive. He's an assertive. He's an extrovert. Right? He's a hunter. But his brother, he's a simple guy. Right? He's a simple guy. What does he do? He sits in tents. Right? He sits in tents. He's a scholarly type that sits in the tents. He's meditating. He's learning. While his brother's out there, the Marlboro man, out there, aggressive, tough guy. Very different personalities. What we'll do next time is try and understand what their dilemma is, what they need to work out, and this very strange sale whereby Yaakov wants to buy the position of the firstborn.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.